Well, hello again, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to the next, latest, and greatest installment of the TF Metals Report podcast. Today is actually Tuesday before Thanksgiving, the 22nd. So as you're hearing this, this was recorded a couple days before we released it, but I have such an honor and a privilege to release this podcast, as it's a chance for you to get to know a guy that has been instrumental in the Silver Wars, we'll call it, for years now. Our guest today is Ted Butler. Ted, who many of you are familiar with his work, has been in the commodity industry for now for almost 40 years. He began with Merrill Lynch way back when I was 6 years old. How about that, Ted? In 1972. But he's been an independent analyst for over 10 years now. And he writes a subscription service at the website butlerresearch.com. You can subscribe. There's a monthly fee, but let me tell you, it's worth every penny. Ted, let's take a second and talk about a few things. Welcome to the Turd Metals Report podcast.
Glad to be here, Turd. It's an honor.
Oh, come on now. Stop it. It's an honor for me to talk to you. I'm just a turd. I'm just this regular guy. You've done yeoman's work for years, and there are so many people such as myself that only in the last couple of years have had a light turn on about the markets in general, but the precious metals specifically. And you've been in there advising people to be specifically in silver for years now. If you could just kind of talk a little bit about, I guess, what brought you to this point? What got your interest in metals specifically, and then silver from there? And what are the events that have kind of put you here?
Well, it's interesting. I'll condense it. But about 25 years or so ago, I was a broker at the time. I started at Merrill Lynch, went on to Drexel Burnham, which was a good house. It's too bad what happened to it, but after the big silver move in 1980, the price then collapsed after running up to $50 back down to $5. I had a client, Izzy Friedman, who gave me a challenge. He knew I was a commodity broker. I did my own analysis, kind of dug into things deeply, and wasn't a quick trader, put positions on for a long time. So I did my own analysis, and he gave me a challenge, which was basically to figure out and explain how we could have a situation in silver, which he was a big investor in, and I did handle his account and know how successful he was, how could we have a situation where we had a deficit consumption pattern? We were basically consuming more than we were producing, and yet the price not go up. And at first I thought, oh, I'll answer this guy real easy. It's no big deal. Let me just do a little study, and I did it. And it turned out that the guy was right. I couldn't answer it, and it bugged me for a good long period of time, like a year or more. I couldn't figure out how could you have a situation where you were consuming more than you were producing and the price not go up. I mean, that was the opposite of everything that you hope your children learn in school about the law of supply and demand and what have you. So, make a long story short, after an intense study and thinking about it constantly, it dawned on me one day, and I looked at the, fortunately I had a background in commodities, and I was looking at the tables. They don't have them anymore, but in the Wall Street Journal, they had a great commodity page with all the months and the open interest and the volume, et cetera. And I was contemplating this, and it just dawned on me that out of nowhere, it struck me that the open interest and the commitment, and therefore the long and short position in silver, COMEX silver, was completely out of line with every other commodity when you converted it to real world supplies. And the dawning on me was that there was such a large short position, in addition to a long position, but there was such a large short position above and beyond basically all the silver that we produced and consumed in the year, that it was the explanation for why the price was depressed. And ever since that point, it's been a constant theme. This we still have this ratio. It's not as extreme as it was back then, but in some ways it's more extreme because as it evolved, I could see that the short position was dominated, was held by commercial traders, money center banks, basically in New York. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, it became more concentrated, and that has basically been the chief proof that the silver is manipulated, in my opinion. And it's still true to this day. We have this outsized paper position, and it's not a problem on the long side because, you know, that's what people do. They think something is it's a natural reaction. You think something is cheap, you buy it. It's not natural for people, if they don't think something is cheap, that they go out and sell it short. Some people do that, and it is an aspect of the markets, but what was unusual about the short position in silver, it wasn't held by the public. The long position was held by the public, was very diverse, whereas the short position was held by just a few commercials on the COMEX and was very concentrated. And basically that position has carried, that scenario has carried through all these years, and it's at the heart of it. So that's how I got started in looking at silver, and after seeing it, I've tried to do what I can to end it, to terminate it. It's illegal. It's an artificial suppression of the price. It's slowly breaking, but it's not broken yet. And it will be broken in time, hopefully, while we're all still alive.
Well, you have, and you have carried the fight. Excuse me. You have carried the flag in front of all of us for years. You were, I think, instrumental in the ultimately getting the CFTC to begin the process of imposing position limits, and that I don't want to say pressured Ted, but it was you that kept shining the light on the inaction and the action that needed to be taken. You were confident. I don't want to, well, maybe confident's not the right word, but you were hopeful that Chairman Gensler was a different kind of chairman, and certainly that Commissioner Chilton, though they all have too many responsibilities, I think, to be able to focus on one specific thing. But I think you were confident that Gensler and Chilton would see what is happening and make some moves to affect some change. We're seeing it now. I don't know. How do you define a swap, Ted? I mean, I guess we're still waiting on that so that we can move forward. But how do you feel, where do we stand in that process? Do you think we're making some progress, and will that imposition of some position limits, limits, is that going to happen in 2012?
Well, I won't put a date on it. I think it's happening now. I'm both encouraged and disappointed. I'm encouraged that they are making the right steps, and because position limits are the natural, in fact, they're the only antidote to a concentration. You have to limit the size of a position in order for there not to be a concentration. So, and if you have a concentration, automatically you have a manipulation. So it's not it's not that complicated. And I'm very encouraged that they're moving in this direction. As you say, I've been promoting position limits to the COMEX and the exchange and the CFTC for more than 20 years, and I'm very encouraged that they're doing it. I'm disappointed that it's going as slow as it is, but I think I understand. I try and understand why they're so slow on it, and it's like they have to like diffuse, I think, a bomb, okay, that could go off in this market by attacking the big concentrated short position in silver, and they don't want to be blamed, and I don't blame them for detonating something that wasn't of their making. They're not, the Commodity Commission is not short the market, somebody else is. So they have a delicate act here, and they don't want to be blamed for blowing up the market. At the same time, it is a ongoing crime in progress, and it's an outrage that every day it exists. And thanks to people like yourself, more and more exposure is being created. And as that exposure takes place, more people will come into the fray and see that this is not right. You can't have a big concentrated position either on the long side or on the short side of a market. It distorts the market. And the movement is good that the Commodity Commission is taking. However, it's agonizingly slow. Mm-hmm. But look, if I can handle it for 20 some odd years, then what's a few more months or even a year or so? But I think it's going to be in that time frame. I'm just being overly optimistic, but it looks good at this point.
Well, and I think we're beginning to see those positions unwound, but you can't necessarily see it on a week by week basis in the Commitment of Traders report, just because there is so much. But if you look at it as a from a bigger term picture, if you could, if there was, maybe we ought to construct some type of moving average, if you will, of what the short position, the commercial short position is, so that you could look at it over time, kind of like how they flatten out the employment claims number, you know, by looking at it as a moving average, because it does appear to be happening. We saw it in gold. In the run from the beginning of August until middle of September, where you could clearly see in the Commitment of Traders report that the bank commercial short position was declining significantly, and it was that covering, that buying that drove the price up almost $300.
You're 100% correct. I mean, that's exactly the way to look at it. You got to look at it on a longer term basis, on a smoothing average type basis, and the position in silver has come, the concentrated position in silver has come down. It's kind of like the bad guys, the crooks as I call them, are they're staging a strategic retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that. You have to look at it on that longer term basis that you're talking about, but they still have, you know, tricks up their sleeves. I mean, we just went through another, you know, almost 10% decline in three trading days over the end of last week to through yesterday. So they don't, they're not pitching, they're buying back their short positions willy-nilly. They're professionals. They're crooked, but they're professionals, and they know how to maneuver the market on a short-term basis. And, but in spite of all that, and despite of all the pain and agony that they cause people, from normal innocent investors, from time to time, it is evolving that this short position, this concentrated short position, is being dissolved longer term.
Yes, it's certainly, and I think you're right too, and you can see it from that height of a couple of, you know, 37,000 feet looking down. You can slowly see it happening. I'm not sure We'll get the true price discovery of silver and gold until those short positions are taken off and wound down. But it would be foolish to expect a big short like J.P. Morgan just to say, okay, yeah, you're right. Let's get out of this business and let's just go cover 15,000 contracts this week. That's not.
Can't do it.
That's not how it works. So they want they want to manipulate the price lower so that they can cover it the best price possible in the most efficient and pragmatic way possible. I mean, the end game, that's where they're going. But boy, until we get there, there's more of the same ahead, it would seem.
Agreed. I mean, the thing is, they just can't pitch it and cover it at the market willy nilly because, for one thing, that would expose the manipulation.
True.
More than any other single event.
Yep.
So it's like you got to put yourself in the other guy's shoes all the time, not just what the regulators might be doing, but what the bad guys might be doing too. And you have to sometimes force yourself to think like a criminal. What is their next step going to be? And when you do that, the market somehow comes into greater clarity. You're not going to be able to tell what the price is going to be tomorrow, or next week, whatever. I don't mean in that sense, but it'll be better explained. There'll be a vision there that this is what's evolving. I don't know why they put the position on in the first place. I don't really care. The problem for them is how to gracefully remove themselves from it and without drawing undue attention to what the heck these guys have been doing for the last 10 or 20 years.
That's exactly right. And that, you know what? And that is, that's a very important point, because if they ran off and covered everything in a week, then everybody that's accused them of having this manipulative position would just be able to see and just sandbag, there you go. And not only that, they would drive the price so high in such a short amount of time that their losses would be great. And so they have to take this more pragmatic approach. What you said is entirely consistent with what I've always claimed on my site. People wonder how it is that just a regular guy like me could sit there and have some ability to forecast price. Well, again, if you recognize, what I've always said, if you recognize these markets are manipulated, if you admit that to yourself first, well, from there, like you said, Ted, all you have to do is be able to anticipate what the criminal is going to do. I mean, you're just a detective. You're going to go out and say, okay, how do I pick what's going to happen next? Well, knowing what their modus operandi is, you can begin to, I guess, be a prognosticator in terms of what's going to happen 3, 6, 12 months from now. It makes it far less complicated. Ted, I want to touch on another thing that you've been, in terms of manipulation, that you've been championing now for some time, and that is the concentrated short position. Well, maybe it's not concentrated, but maybe it is, in the GLD and in the SLV. It's a hard thing to put into English sometimes for folks and to explain how it works, why there might be that short position, you know, who's benefiting from that. Can you just take a little time and talk about what you see there?
Sure. I concentrate mostly on the SLV, but now that GLD I look at too. It is a short problem, I believe, particularly in the SLV, but not the same short problem that you see in the COMEX, where you have just a straight concentrated short position. Starting this year, before the big run up in silver was developing earlier in the year, I know a lot of people don't like the SLV. They think it's a scam. They don't think the silver's there, etc. And I'm a proponent of the SLV. I think it's the best thing that came along for silver investors. If it didn't have the 312 million ounces that has in it, and another 300 million ounces in other silver ETFs around the world, I don't think we would probably be at the price of silver that we are right now. It's been a great mechanism for people who normally wouldn't buy silver, an institutional stock account, a retirement account, whatever, that didn't have the ability to buy physical metal. This mechanism allowed them, the ETF allowed them to do it, and I think on balance it's good. But I do say, look, if you're not comfortable with buying the SLV, don't buy it. Buy silver in a different form, buy a box of Eagles, buy something physical. But rather than buy nothing at all, I think the SLV and the GLD are appropriate. However, I am concerned with the short position in both SLV and GLD. And the reason I am is because if you think it through, anybody who sells short shares of a hard metal ETF, like the SLV and the GLD are supposed to be, with a prescribed amount of physical material deposited for each share issued, if somebody comes along and shorts, they basically short-circuit that process of metal backing the shares, because I can assure you that the short sellers of shares in SLV or GLD do not deposit metal with the sponsor, with the custodian, and therefore the amount of shares outstanding on the short side of these ETFs do not have metal backing. This report comes out every couple of weeks. We should have a new one maybe within a week or so, maybe this week, maybe early into next week. But the last report we had for short sales on the SLV was around 24 million shares slash ounces. It's almost an ounce per share. So there's 24 million shares held short in the last report, short report for SLV. That of 323 million shares outstanding, that represents about 7.5% of the shares of SLV, total outstanding shares that are held short. That 7.5%, that 24 million shares, does not have metal backing. And I think that's a violation, even though I'm a shareholder of SLV, I think that that's a violation of the prospectus, in that this 7.5% or 24 million shares does not have metal backing. And I've been trying to bend all over the new sponsor, BlackRock, who happens to be the largest money manager in the world, that this is fraud and manipulation, and it should not be allowed. This particular class of securities, these hard metal ETFs, there should be no short selling allowed, okay, because it's in violation of the principle of the prospectus. I don't know if we're making headway. I know it was as high as 37 million shares earlier in the year, near where we peaked out in silver, so I'm glad it's down from there. But it did jump up about 4 million shares in this last report, from 20 million to 24 million, and that was a bad turn. We don't want that. I think it's part of the manipulation, in that I believe that the big short sellers in COMEX Silver are also the big short sellers in SLV. I cannot prove that, but neither can anybody else the other way, because for some crazy reason, they don't give breakdowns. The stock exchange, the depository trust, clearing corporation, does not provide breakdowns of who's holding shorts. It's kind of crazy, because on the long side of a stock, if you go over a certain amount of ownership, 5%, you have to declare immediately with the SEC and make that public. Yep. We don't have the same reporting requirements on the short side of stocks, which is absolutely crazy. But the fact of the matter is, we can only guess and surmise who might be short. I say the people who go short the SLV, the big shorts, are doing it because they can't get the physical silver, and they're shorting the shares instead, and without putting in metal backing. And to me, that's fraudulent, manipulative, and I brought this to the attention of BlackRock and the regulatory authorities. They give these wishy-washy answers, coming back saying, well, it's not our job, it's not our responsibility, but it doesn't address the issue that this is fraudulent and manipulative. So while I think that these ETFs are generally on the up and up, and if they say they got 300 million ounces, they give you the serial numbers, they give you the weights of the bars, they give you the hallmark, I believe that they're there. That is there. But I do know that the short sales of these ETFs, and the same thing's going on in GLD, is completely bogus and should be outlawed. And I defy anybody to come up and describe it in generous or honest terms.
Because Ted, if and for readers that don't understand how a short sale works, to be able to sell shares of an ETF or of a common stock short, you have to be able to borrow those shares from someone that is long. So someone owns 100 shares of SLV in their brokerage account in street name, and someone wants to short 100 shares of SLV, they borrow the 100 from, you know, Mr. X, and then they go short that, they sell that Mr. X's 100. Well, on the other side of Mr. X's short sale is another buyer. So now we have the first guy that owned the 100 shares that loaned the 100 shares of SLV, and now we have the second guy that just bought 100 shares. We have two folks that are beneficial owners of these same 100 shares. And the problem is what Ted was saying, by prospectus, every share is supposed to have an ounce of silver behind it. Did I sum that up okay, Ted? Is that a safe?
You did it perfectly. It's like a double ownership, and it's you know, you got to think it through a little bit, but it's completely fraudulent in that, you know, there are two buyers out there. They both think that they have metal behind it, but mathematically, one of them is coming up short. One of them has no metal behind it, and that's where the fraud comes in. I call it manipulation too, because the guy who's selling it short is able to supply material to the market without putting it up.
Right.
It does serve as a depressant to price, and that's where the manipulation angle comes in. You described it perfectly.
And so, could you just the connection then, Ted? Because this is something that I'm glad that you're already on, and this is something that I'm paying strict close attention to as well. Because one of the possibilities is as the position limits are implemented, well, then maybe perhaps the shorts just look for different places to play, this being potentially one of them. Yeah, do you know the mechanism well enough that you could describe how someone shorting SLV actually then suppresses the paper price on the COMEX?
Sure, you just got to step back a little bit and think it through from a different angle, from a different perspective, and that's basically this. Right now, there's 24 million, in the last report, 24 million shares / ounces that are held short in the SLV at the peak back in April, May. It was up to 37 million. My contention is this, back then at 37 million or now at 24 million, if the SOBs that were shorting the stock, okay, had to go out and buy the 24 million right now ounces or the 37 million ounces back then, the price would have been a hell of a lot higher.
Right.
There's no way that somebody can come into the market and buy 24 million real ounces of silver or 37 million real ounces of silver without having the price go substantially higher. So the mere fact that they're agreeing to sell something without having it, they're evading having to go out and buy the real material and short-circuiting the whole process, and that is a manipulation, because if they had to go out and buy the real metal as the prospectus called for, we'd be a heck of a lot higher in price.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
Well, you can sure see, I mean, you can begin to see real clearly how if forced from open, well, maybe not open, covert manipulation on the COMEX, how, well, okay, we'll just manipulate the price over here on the New York Stock Exchange instead. You can certainly see how the groundwork has been laid for them to do that by getting away with these short positions.
Yeah, and the key going forward now, there's two things I'm looking at. On the next silver rally, which can start momentarily, on the next big silver rally, the next, you know, $5, $10 up in price, the key to watch is going to be if the concentrated short position on the COMEX held by J.P. Morgan increases, and if the short position in SLV increases. And if it does, you know, you have to be prepared to scream but bloody murder, okay, that this is a manipulation, because the only reason anybody would be increasing a concentrated short position on the COMEX or increasing the short position in SLV is quite simply because they don't have the real material and they're trying to cap and control the price. And that is so illegal, it's not funny.
Yep. Well, Ted, your time is valuable and I want to respect that, but I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to ask you about the shenanigans over the last month at MF Global. You have been, again, in this industry now for, I mean, I hate to do this to you, but for almost 40 years.
Sorry, I feel so old.
I'm sorry. But 40 years is a long time. And what we can't fully appreciate at this moment is the degree to which the foundation of trust has been shattered by what has happened at MF Global. But nonetheless, I have to take this opportunity just to ask you of your impressions of the whole situation, of what has transpired, where we are today, and what you think this does to the futures industry going forward.
Well, I'm not actively involved in the futures now industry right now, but it isn't good, I can tell you that. And while there's plenty of blame to go around, okay, to assign to MF Global for creating this problem, there's no question that they blew it. They just messed everything up. The real takeaway that I'm afraid is being lost initially, but is starting to be picked up now, which I'm kind of encouraged about, is that who's really to blame for this sudden loss of confidence and cloudy future that we have in the futures industry. And that you got to peg it on the CME Group. They are the exchange. They've been trying to lay in the reeds and lay in the background as to it's somebody else's problem. But the real problem here is that the CME did not step up to the plate from the get-go and guarantee to make whole every customer of MF Global. That was the expectation in the futures industry for the last 100 years, that should a firm go out of business, a clearing firm go out of business, that those customers are going to be guaranteed to be made whole by the exchange. This is something that the CME advertised at every possible venue they could. Every possible avenue was always given to that we're the exchange, we're here to back everybody up. When the first real test of this came on October 31st, when MF Global did declare bankruptcy, the CME ran away like a bunch of little girls. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. They should have stood up there. They should have guaranteed, even at this late date, they should be guaranteeing no matter what the losses are, because this is the glue that holds the futures industry together, is some safety for positions and safety for customer funds has got to be guaranteed by the exchange. In this case, it's the CME. That they haven't done it is deplorable. And I can't emphasize that strong enough. People are making a big deal about, oh, Gensler has a relationship with Corzine from 200 years ago, or that MF Global, Corzine did this, and he did a lot of things, and he should be blamed, and maybe he should go to jail. But the real culprit here, the entity that has created this, made this mess grow into the problem that it is the CME Group, because they didn't do the right thing. They didn't step up to the plate and guarantee everybody like they advertised that they would for so many years. So the blame goes on the CME.
So the question is why? I saw it speculated last week that the reason they're not stepping up to cover MF Global is they know that there are so many other potential MF Globals out there.
I don't know about that. That might be the case. I have a different take. I'm very prejudiced on this. I'm very opinionated, okay? I've been saying it for a long time, that I think basically, I'm not trying to get sued here or anything, but I think that the CME is almost a criminal enterprise. It's like all they do is try and generate additional revenue to themselves. They're supposed to be a self-regulatory organization, which means they have some responsibility. And all they've done in this particular case is like say it's not our problem. On the same day that MF Global declared bankruptcy, October 31st, that day, by coincidence, the CME was conducting their quarterly earnings conference call. And on that conference call, the CEO of the CME, Craig Donohue, came up and said that, customers could lose money in this MF Global, and it's not our responsibility to stand behind it. I couldn't believe it. That is their responsibility to stand behind it, and the fact that they didn't that day, and the fact that they haven't stepped fully up to the plate today, okay, is all on them. That's the big problem. Yeah, MF Global screwed up bad, okay, but what's really turned this into the unmitigated disaster that I wrote about is the failure of the CME to do what they promised to do beforehand, and that's to guarantee every customer that had positions on through their exchange.
At the end of the day, as that ties back into a tidy little knot of the manipulation story, the CME perhaps is only just concerned about the CME in that they own the COMEX. You go back to April when silver was where silver was. At the time, also kind of looked like gold in August. That last maybe week or so was primarily on the backs of some short covering to go from 43 up to 49. Nonetheless, right when we reached this kind of critical inflection point or tipping point on the viability of the COMEX and deliverable silver, magically, there's a raid on a Sunday night when no one's around on the Globex. That starts the ball rolling, trips a bunch of stops, and then the CME comes in and covers everybody with an unprecedented four margin hikes in the next 8 days. And again, what is the CME protecting? Their own property, the COMEX. Perhaps the CME is only just simply looking out for themselves and not everyone else.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's the second. You know, we have that happened twice.
Yep.
This year. That happened in May 1st, as you say. Happened again in September. It's impossible to knock down a world commodity like silver 30% in a matter of a few trading days. Okay, without some very visible economic reasons, some big change in supply demand.
Yeah.
It had to be, and we didn't have that, so therefore, the only other reasonable, plausible explanation for what took place was flat-out manipulation, and I lay it all on the doorstep of the CME, just like I lay this whole MF Global disaster on the doorstep of the CME. They do not deserve to be regulating anything in any, they don't deserve to be the dog catcher, okay? They should be taken out of the regulation business completely, because they've already proven
they have so many clear conflicts of interest that, we'll leave
absolutely
it at that. Lastly, Ted, we are in the throes of another pretty significant sell-off in silver. Again, to me, it is a manufactured sell-off just to give some room for J.P. Morgan and the other shorts to do some covering at lower prices. There's going to be a point where a bottom is reached. I can speculate with my charts where that might be, but one of the fundamental things that I look at, and one of the fundamental things that I know you look at, it's not the be-all, end-all, but one of the things we look at is that commitment of traders report. I'd like to just get your opinion on this. As we look for, I guess, to approximate a bottom, a time where we think that, okay, maybe now we're going to be trending higher again, would you consider, let's see, maybe a flat trend line in speculative longs, where because we've maybe bled and shaken all the silver leaves from the tree, as Harvey Organ says, and that all the silver is left in nothing but strong hands, and so there are no more spec sellers left. So the spec long position is stabilized, but price is still declining while commercial short interest is rising, showing that they're still trying to hammer it down. But again, in the absence of spec selling, they're not having any success. If you saw a commitment of traders report that was showing those trends of a stable spec long but an increasing short position and a declining price, would that be a point? Is that kind of a fundamental point using all those couple of things put together? Or, God, that was a long. Okay.
Close to that. You know, it's close to that. Well, you got to remember one thing, though. These guys, these commercials, there's about 20 of them, 20 or 30 of them on the comms.
Yep.
I call them financial terrorists, okay? Because what they try and do, they go on a Sunday night, they did it this last few nights, they knock it down big. The idea, just like a terrorist sets off a bomb in Baghdad, okay, they set off a bomb in the market when it's thin, when everybody's sleeping, the price comes down. The idea with a bomb, or with the actions on the COMEX, is to scare and intimidate people by fear, to force them out of the market, and that's basically what they do. And as they're doing this, okay, they're buying. These commercials are buying. It's the long position, the short position of certain commercials comes down, the long position of other commercials, which I call the Raptors, the smaller ones, goes up, and that's been happening. So if you're looking, the bottom line is, if you're looking for a bottom in terms of the commitment of traitors. We're here. This is it, and so we've been here. It's not like any. You don't know which day it is until you have the benefit of hindsight and looking back. But this whole terrorist, financial terrorism that we just saw in the last few days was basically part of the plan that to get people scared, get them to get rid of their contracts, get them not to buy, so that these commercials can buy. And that is, by depth, the way I look at the commitment of traders, how you determine a bottom. Now, you got to keep in mind, this is kind of like hand grenades or horseshoes or atomic weapons, okay? You don't looking for a pinpoint accuracy. You're looking for just coming close. And we're close. This short position on the COMEX, the commercial short position on the COMEX, is the lowest it's been in almost a decade, and that's close enough for a bottom for me. Can I get the last dollar or two? Can I get pinpointed? I gave up trying to do that a long time ago. This is close enough. This looks like enough of a bottom to label it a bottom. And the financial terrorists, I think, have done their job. They've set off enough car bombs that have scared people and out of their positions so that they could buy. And I think we're there. Now, whether we move in 2 days or in 2 weeks or in 2 months, it's hard to say, okay, but the foundation is set. As far as the commitment of traders is concerned,
Ted, that's an excellent summary, and I guess that's probably a good stopping point at this point. Yes, and we will continue to watch that commitment of traders closely. Your latest piece that you just wrote a couple of days ago was terrific in describing the what happens, particularly in silver, as financial terrorism. Ted, for everybody listening, has graciously offered to let me copy and paste that latest piece of his to this podcast report. I would encourage you, one, to read it and pay close attention to what Ted is describing. But then I would further, and I would strongly encourage you, if you like what you read, and if you see value in it, which I'm confident you will, to click the link which I'll provide, which will send you to butlerresearch.com, and strongly consider investing in a subscription to Ted's site, especially if you're, it doesn't matter if you're trying to trade silver, invest in silver, stack silver. The wisdom and the experience that Ted shares with his subscribers is frankly invaluable. And so I give it a 2 thumbs way up. I want to thank you, Ted, for your time. I want to thank you again for all that you've done for all of us all of these years. And please keep the faith and hang in there and keep fighting the fight, because we need you. All right. Thanks,
thanks a lot,
hopefully
Derek.
We can
that's
visit again
really
sometime soon. And thank you for your time today.